Is your agency ready for Agile? Booz Allen uses the frameworks, tools, and training to make Agile work for you. Stop reacting to change and start leading transformation. Visit BoozAllen.com/Federal News Radio.
From new training strategies for big gun operation to a consortium for buying prototypes, the Defense Department is trying a lot of new things. Reporting on all of it has been Bloomberg Government Senior Defense Analyst Rob Levinson, and he joins me now. And you have been covering a variety of topics, and I guess let's begin with one I found interesting, and that is the Air Force setting up a consortium for buying prototypes. Is this another defense innovation unit only writ for the Air Force?
Well, it's I don't know if it's a defense innovation unit exactly, but it's another use of these other transaction authorities, which have become very popular, and they set up this consortium where you know, companies become members, and then there's a very accelerated process. You just sort of submit white papers and things like that. So it seems to me that this and this one's very broad. It includes a whole variety of stuff. It's just another way of the Air Force sort of using this new OTA authority that everybody seems so enthusiastic about to speed things up in a whole variety of areas.
And who is in the consortium? I mean, what does that mean? What is the content of the consortium itself?
Well, the announcement that the Air Force made, they actually have to award the consortium management contract, which will probably go to Advanced Technology International. They seem to get most of these. And then, so the consortium hasn't actually been set up yet, but anybody can join. I mean, companies can join, universities, even an individual can join. There's really no limitation. You pay $500 and you're in on the consortium.
And what can one prototype for the Air Force? I mean, it takes them 20 years to develop a new airplane platform.
Right. Well, if you look at the list of things that they said that this particular, this is out of the Air Force's Lifecycle Management Center based in Massachusetts. And, you know, it's everything. It says weapon system and commercial derivative aircraft platforms, battle management, clothing and uniforms, automatic test systems. It's a variety of smaller stuff. They're not going to use this to you know, build a new fighter jet.
And so when they say, for example, derivative aircraft platforms, that's likely to be a ruggedized drone or something.
Yeah, something like that, a ruggedized UAV or, a very lightly modified commercial, maybe a small business jet or something like that, but nothing where you're developing like a bomber or a fighter jet.
And the thing is, if they use OTA in a consortium setting and they buy a prototype and they like it, is that contractor then eligible for a volume follow-on contract, or would the Air Force own the intellectual property and the blueprints, whatever it might be, the designs, and then they would have to bid it out for volume?
Well, it's interesting. The question of intellectual property has come up in a few discussions I've had on these OTA things, and really once they sign an agreement for the prototype, those intellectual property discussions have to be worked out, and so they can vary. I think sort of the ideal is that the Air Force finds some small business that creates some really cool technology. And then what I think the Air Force often envisions having to say, okay, you've created this great prototype, we like it, now we need 10,000 of those. That small business may not be able to do it, and so then they work in agreement with, a Lockheed or a Raytheon or a Northrop Grumman under some sort of licensing arrangement or something like that. But the actual intellectual property stipulations can be different for every one of these, depending on what the contractor is comfortable with and what the government is comfortable with.
And how might this relate to the AF Works, WERX? That seems to be a popular suffix the military is using for its different branches.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing where they're trying to have these competitions. I think I wrote about one of these competitions recently on security technology, again, for the Air Force. These are all sorts of ways to speed up the acquisition process, get around some of the rules of the FAR, bring in non-traditional contractors. This is a very popular theme right now because, as you are well aware, you've covered this stuff for a long time. Reforming the big clunky acquisition system that we have is really, really hard, and reforms go through, and it still doesn't seem to change things very much. And so people are looking for these sort of alternatives.
We're speaking with Bloomberg Government Senior Defense Analyst Rob Levinson. And let's turn to the Army, which is trying to change doctrine and techniques and strategies for training people on the operation of big guns. That seems like an odd one.
Yeah, well, I think it seems reading this thing that that I wrote about for the Army, where there's their Program Executive Office for Simulation Training Instrumentation, they seem to want to try and consolidate, you know, the training and operation of a variety of systems, the Strykers, the M1 Abrams, the Bradleys, and even some new experimental systems that they haven't even sort of come up with yet. And they seem to want some sort of a common simulation platform, you know, I guess that guys will sort of climb into, crews could climb into, and you flip a switch, and so one day it's an M1 tank, and the next day it's a Bradley, and they can probably be networked remotely. But it was interesting, the Army put out this proposal. All they really did to say to industry, hey, give us some ideas here. But it seems like they want an overarching program rather than buying sort of individual simulators, I think, for each of these separate weapon systems.
And do you think this is derived from the fact that operating the platforms themselves for training purposes can be very expensive?
Yeah, I mean, that's just it, is, you know, going out to the National Training Center at Fort Irwin in Southern California and driving tanks and Bradleys around is great training, but it's horrendously expensive. And this is just another way of, you know, if we can put guys in a box, you know, from the outside it looks like a box, but inside it looks just like an M1. With all the virtual capabilities that we have and ability to network, you can get really good virtual immersive training for troops at a fraction of the cost of driving around the desert, you know, in an M1A1.
But maybe a lesser matter, but still important, is the concussive possibilities of firing big guns live.
Right. I mean, there have been some studies recently, not on particularly on the big guns, but even on anti-tank weapons that soldiers have fired, and they're finding that they may be, you know, inducing some, you know, minor traumatic brain injury and damaging their hearing. And so this is a way where you can control all of that in the training environment. Look, in the real world, if they have to fight, they'll do it. But you don't want to damage the soldiers, you know, in the training environment if they can still get the benefit of using the system.
And finally, in a weird kind of convergence, I guess you might say, the Commerce Department, you've discovered, is looking at the possible effects on automobile tariffs that the Trump administration is imposing or threatening on, and that could have an effect on the defense supply chain.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. You know, as part of President Trump's trade policy, you know, before he implements these tariffs, there has to be these studies, these Section 232 investigations done. They did one on steel and they did one on aluminum, you know, which concluded that you know, that there was an impact on national security, and then President Trump implemented some tariffs on those things. And so now they're doing one on auto parts, and presumably they could conclude that, you know, yes, we can put tariffs on auto parts, but they at least want to see, is this potentially, could it have an effect? You know, if you affect, is there overlap between the auto parts supply chain and the defense supply chain? And what I found using some real proprietary data that Bloomberg has is, yes, there are overlaps between these supply chains. And so if you hurt, say, particularly a foreign supplier of some auto parts, that may affect some defense programs as well.
Rob Levinson is senior defense analyst at Bloomberg Government. As always, appreciate that update.
Thank you, Tom. It was a pleasure.
Find links to more information and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One.